Welcome to Podcast on Fire Network bonus episode 22 on The Housemaid from 2010. For the 50-year anniversary of Kim Ki-young's 1960 classic that we reviewed on Watch Korean Cinema 18, director Im Sang-soo directed what is mostly said to be a reinterpretation of Kim's movie, but it was still brought out as The Housemaid, rightly or not, in terms of the name. So welcome to this website-exclusive bonus episode where me, Kennedy, and Hangul, Celluloid's Paul Quinn, are going to discuss and review the remake slash retake, whatever you think it is. So say hello, first of all, Paul.
Good evening, everyone.
You know, on a personal note, or a serious note slightly, I like doing Watch Korean Cinema regardless, because it turns out it's the most difficult show for me to do because everything is new, but the process of everything being new, talking about it mostly for the first time, with someone informed, like you, have made it, along with Japan on Fire, my favorite shows to do.
I'm really pleased to hear you say that. I love doing this.
We have the opportunity to bring as much context as we can based on the skill set that we have, but it's not really about the skill set, it's about the kind of sincerity that you bring to the table, and you certainly bring a skill set and a sincerity and a depth and context, and I try to research and learn context through the research and not bring foolishness to the show.
I'm always really impressed with the research you come up with, you know, I really am. So it shows the work works.
Thanks, man. It's not from scratch, though. I use Wikipedia mostly, but I'm thinking, like, for modern, most Korean cinema, I don't think people are injecting, like, grossly false information into the Wikipedia entries. I hope not, anyway, because then I'd look like a fool, but it seems legit, anyway.
It mostly is, mostly. There's the odd little twinge here and there when you look at mostly older stuff, really. But, you know, it's pretty, you can't really fault it, do you know what I mean? It gives people information right at their fingertips, so.
And that's how I deal with the research for this show. Not a lot of research for this one. You will mostly bring the detailed background because you have met director Im Sang-soo that we talked about during the main episode. We're going to talk a little bit more about it because now we firmly talk of The Housemaid remake, for lack of a better word. So from 2010 it is, and plot from Paul's review over at Hangul Celluloid that I slightly shortened, but it doesn't mean it was bad. I just thought, like, hey, that's a nice, like, ... cutoff point, so I'll be gross and cut off his plot synopsis by two sentences or something like that. Eun Yi, played by Jeon Do-yeon, sorry for butchering the names, a divorcee who works at a food outlet in a busy city thoroughfare, secures the position as junior housemaid to an upper-class and overprivileged couple. The couple is Hoon, played by male actor Lee Jung-jae, and his wife Hae-ra, played by Seo Woo, as well as their young child Nami. On returning from a business trip, the husband Hoon meets Eun Yi for the first time and before long uses his position of power as the master of the household to enter her bed, stirring long-forgotten feelings within her. However, as Hoon's encounters with Eun Yi increase in their frequency, their liaisons are discovered by the head housekeeper of the family, our elder actress, Byung-sik, played by our elder actress, Yoon Yeo-jong, who takes it upon herself to report the affair to the wife's mother, Mi-hee. The ensuing battle between the women of the household soon begins to affect Eun Yi's mental health. And if you're familiar with the 1960 Housemaid, that doesn't sound like a straight beat-by-beat remake, because it really isn't, and we'll get to that. But lightning fire round here, Paul, like, you're not going to win anything, but we're going to make this into a game show. Like, boom, Im Sang-soo, mention two movies of note.
For me, A Good Lawyer's House and The Old Garden, both quite old. The Good Lawyer's Wife, 2003, The Old Garden, I think 2007. Yeah, 2007. His best films, they're very indicative of what he does. Even though The Old Garden was an absolute flop at the cinemas, I think it's one of his best films.
And are we talking, well, you kind of answered it, but I'm going to throw this question to you anyway for the sake of context. Mainstream director, indie director, middle-of-the-road director in terms of recognition in the mainstream, any good as a director?
All of the above. He's really hard to pigeonhole. Im Sang-soo would like to be an auteur, but he's not. He's seen more mainstream. But at the same time, there's so much sex in many of his films that he's seen as less acceptable in the mainstream. He has, if any of you end up reading the review, he actually has a problem with reviewers because none of them, or the vast majority of them, slag off his work because of the amount of sex in it. I think that's being quite harsh.
It really depends on if it's gratuitous or not. I mean, I can lay this down right now. The Housemaid has a lot of sex and explicit content. I didn't think that content was like a desperate plea to matter.
I totally agree. He has his agendas. He has his own thing, as we'll compare, I guess, with Kim Ki-young in a minute or two. But when he's good, he's great. I'm a huge fan of his older work. I absolutely abhor one of his more recent films, which we'll talk about in a moment.
Been around for since 70s, 80s. What are we talking here?
He first started as an actor, and he's acted in a fair few notable-ish films. Moved into directing, worked as almost, not quite assistant director, but as a director helper, if you like, with Bong Joon-ho on one of his first films, Barking Dogs Don't Bite, and then moved into directing from there. So his first solo directing thing was sort of 98, and he's been going ever since then.
Right on, like a year or two away from the big Korean New Wave international boom.
Pretty much, and he did, as the boom sort of hit, he was very much a part of it. And again, that's a lot to do with A Good Lawyer's Wife and another film called The President's Last Bang. But we'll talk a little bit more about some of his other things as we go through, because they're all linked.
I said that you interviewed Im Sang-soo, and first of all, was it one of those group dealios, or did you have a one-on-one with the director?
Thankfully, this was a one-on-one, I think at the 2011. I should really have checked. It was either 2011.
I've interviewed so many people. I keep getting lost in all the fame I'm bathing in.
It might even have been 2010. That year, I interviewed him and Kim Ji-eun. Kim Ji-eun's interview was one of the first I'd ever done individually, and it was one of the easiest, and Im Sang-soo's was one of the most difficult interviews I have ever done in my life.
Oh, intriguing. Well, you can tell the entire tale if you like, but I want you to work in a little bit what we talked about in the main podcast about what he said going into the making of The Housemaid. And my curious question, first of all, therefore, do you know, either from him or reading up on a movie, if this was Im Sang-soo's own idea or a studio-headed idea to do The Housemaid on the 50-year anniversary of release?
Well, we'll start with the whole me talking to him about The Housemaid, because that was the first thing I mentioned. And immediately you brought the subject up, you could almost feel him being defensive from the outset. He clearly wasn't interested in the film being called a remake. It was a reinterpretation. He went out of his way to say he had put a thing in at the end of the film, which actually says this is a reinterpretation. He said he used Kim Ki-young as inspiration, but this was essentially him being asked by a studio if he'd be interested in doing a film. And he actually went as far as to say that he saw no honor in it, even though the film was illustrious and, you know, one of the best thought of Korean films ever. The words, his exact words were, "I felt no honor. I felt no pressure. I made my own film." That sort of set the scene. He really wanted to see this as separate from The Housemaid, even though it is The Housemaid. It was inspired by The Housemaid. It's even got the same title as The Housemaid, even in Korean, Hanyo.
Well, at least he got to write it. He was not handed a script. So at least it's studio and a studio idea brought to him, but he was allowed to write it. You know, at least he got that creative freedom. You know what I mean?
Totally. And you can, as you watch the reinterpretation, no matter what you think of it, you can see that it is Im Sang-soo's film from start to finish. This is not a remake of Kim Ki-young's movie.
Yeah, and we have some, we will, because I'm going to trigger discussion on the whole global issue of remake at the top of the review a little bit more, a little bit back and forth. But in general, what else do you want to say about meeting? I mean, you say defensive, but was it intimidating, therefore? Like, was there a bad vibe in the room? Or was just that subject was a little bit...
I think that subject was difficult. And I mean, for someone who's not actually that enamored by reviewers, I think it was more that he wasn't prepared to let you have an easy time until he was sure you knew where you were coming from. And I mean, if you watch a lot of Im Sang-soo films, they're essentially sex and politics. And to him, I guess the politics is more important than the sex. The sex is just, like you say, it's there for a reason, but it's not necessarily overly gratuitous or just there for being there. And until I mentioned politics, you could tell he wasn't that open. And as I mentioned the politics, he gradually eased and he actually started to want to talk about things. So I think it's more he was almost sure that everybody was going to go, oh, this is a remake, why is it different? When my interview wasn't really like that, it became easier as it went along.
Well, you always, based on the transcripts that I read, always come prepared, and you do, based on the text, it really come at the subjects with an aura of knowledge and sincerity, and I think that's a good case. It sounds like someone appreciating that, and so good on you for surviving that test, if you will.
thank you very much. If we get a chance, I will tell you a story. I will talk about it because it's about the housemaid.
This is a bonus episode. I'm not too picky about structure. We are going to review a movie here, but feel free to waffle, as you say, if you like. So
we'll keep the most of the thing later on, but I asked the most controversial question I've ever asked in an interview. I made Im Sang-soo almost sweat in terms of whether to answer it or not, and I got an answer out of him, and I will guarantee you no other Korean film critic or website knows the information that I got from Im Sang-soo or knew it before it was on my site. But we'll talk about that later.
Right on. Well, it's up to you to remember to insert that wherever you like in this bonus discussion. So let's jump into the review then. And for my quick opinion, it's okay. It's not a rousing experience, but there's plenty of messed up verbal antics, physical antics, explicit and even shocking imagery. It won't linger as such with me, but it was quite okay. Key point is, though, I was easily able to separate it from Kim Ki-young's original. I'd argue, even though I'm a horrible arguer, that this isn't a remake. And I'm kind of sad that it needs to be called The Housemaid at all, to be honest. But there you are. That's a film business for you. Like, this could have been a similar template about The Housemaid, and people, I think, wouldn't have jumped like, hey, Housemaid! Like, people would have, I don't think people would have thought about it had it been called something else in Korean and English. But hey, it's field business, so there you are. But for you, your quick bite-sized opinion for now.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I take it even further that I think the fact that it was linked in any way, shape, or form to Kim Ki-young's film did Im Sang-soo's movie a disservice. Because anyone who had seen The Housemaid and knew this was a reinterpretation had expectations of a phenomenal film when they went into it, and I'd guarantee that any of them who couldn't separate it would have been disappointed with The Housemaid. And it's not lingering, as you say, it's not as stylish as Kim Ki-young's film, but it has its merits and it deserves more than a comparison to one of the best Korean films ever made.
And spontaneously, do you know if the admissions were therefore poor to medium, or even was it a success upon release?
Fair to middling. It didn't flop, but it wasn't what everybody wanted it to be. It wasn't the huge box office hit that you would imagine a reimagining of a classic Korean film would be.
Well, if you switch it to the... in terms of the casting, did that have any commercial pull? Because I only recognize one actor, and that's Moon Soo-ri in a supporting role, but she's not a lead character. So.
Massively. I mean, we've got Jin Do-yeon as the housemaid. She's possibly the most famous Korean actress there is. She's at Cannes every year. She's had Cannes top awards that have only been given to, you know, George Clooney, J.K. Rowling. She's Cannes' darling. She was given, the French government gave her a, I can't even remember the name of it, Chevalier des Arts de Lettres or something like that, which essentially says you've had an impact on French culture and arts. And she's Korean. She stars in Korean films. They're so, internationally, she's so, so highly regarded. She's been at Cannes just last month. And massive success with her new film there. She can do no wrong. You take it on to Jung Tae, the main actor.
Lee Jung Jae.
Done so many films, almost as many as Jun Do Yeon. For his whole career, he played the good guy, the love side of you know, romance. For him to be cast in this as essentially a self-serving, narrow-minded, rich, selfish individual really was a shock to audiences, in the same way that a few other actors have been sort of cast upside down from what they normally are, and that's made the film what it is. Those two alone were the draw for this film, her even more than him.
You know, speaking again of original versus remake and all of that, and I hope, well, I shouldn't say that. I'm sure people are married hardcore to the original. And I've just seen it. I saw it for the first time for the podcast. And I welcome a good retake or a alternate view, on this scenario too. Or anything remade, but mostly anything remade out of mainstream horror is more interesting in terms of like, okay, that, why not see an update of that? That might work. There's a better chance of someone crafting a cinematic identity of something that isn't a franchise and essentially horror. You know what I mean? And obviously, like, this could have been a faithful remake, and I would have been like, yeah, why not? I'll give it a shot. But it could have been a beat-by-beat remake, and not in a psycho way, but as a very faithful to the story beats. We live in a world where franchises are remade, and that, and their film studios, Hollywood or not, are being quite lazy in terms of what they're bringing back, whether they're franchises or not. But again, it's a shame this had to be called The Housemaid. I think they would have been able to get away with it, maybe not gotten more success, but it would have been a cool experiment if they'd try to, like, just not say what they're doing. Name it something in Korean, name it something in English, and that's because it's a common enough story, I suppose. It's not the most unique template that Kim Ki-young came up with in the history of everything. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But I suppose when all is said and done, this has enough commercial pull, and the film business is awfully boring and business-like sometimes. And that whole deal that I just spoke of leads to my question to you. Is Korea going through any kind of, or has gone through any kind of remake frenzy as such?
Really? I mean, the way it went 5, 10, even more years ago was essentially Korea would make a film. They'd try and get international interest. They'd sell the rights to a Hollywood company. Hollywood would remake it and it would flop. Now they're tending to much more do remakes of Chinese is the new thing, where they'll take a film that's been big in China or even Japan, I guess, but more China now, and they'll remake it in Korea to get their own take on it, their Korean take of another Asian thing.
What do you think of that? Is that an interesting thing or a lazy kind of boring film business type of thing?
No, I think that's quite interesting, as long as the original is worthy. I think for them to put Korean aesthetics into other Asian territory stuff works quite well, because Korean stuff can be turned a lot darker, can be turned a lot more exciting in terms of the whole Hollywood remakes of Korean stuff. Oh dear Lord, no.
Dude, what happened to the Castaway on the Moon remake? We never heard of that again.
Do you know how glad I am that they never ever did a Castaway on the Moon remake in Korea, in Hollywood, anywhere? It's as it is. It's one of the best films I've ever seen. I love it to death. Leave it alone. You know, you take My Sassy Girl, you take...
Oh, that came out all right, or rather, it came out, but no one, barely anyone saw it, no one liked it.
I bought the DVD for a quid in a second-hand shop, the US version, and it took me about 5 sittings to get through it, and I'm surprised the TV survived through the whole thing, because I was actually quite close
like
to...
Like you had a hammer in the right hand, like...
Yeah, I'm
totally gonna do it.
The Lake House, which is a remake of Il Mare, which has actually got Lee Young Jae in it, the same male actor as in The Housemaid, replaced by Keanu Reeves. I mean, oh.
Well, there's nothing wrong with Keanu. I'm all right with Keanu, but it sounds like the movie didn't bring anything that made it interesting as a Hollywood project, you know, and that's the key. From the stars of Speed.
But as you say, the whole idea of remakes is taking it and doing something original with it. And I guess, in a way, you could say that Im Sang-soo did that with The Housemaid, because, you know, he stepped away from Kim Ki-young's obsession with, you know, despicable women and, oh, this is going to pull down society. And he turned it into sex, politics, class, rich, poor, which is essentially what fills Im Sang-soo's mind. It's all politics and what sex relates to in terms of, you know, political cajoling, I guess.
Yeah, we'll get into the movie, but I'm glad that Korea isn't remake frenzy as such within Korea, like that there's no announcements like of a Sopyeonje remake where the studio like, we love that movie, but my God, it's old. It's boring, it's got old people, and that music, we'll be adding some breakbeats and dubstep to our remake. Like, I'm glad that it's not that, like, infuriating, like, updating to a modern audience type of frenzy.
I'm kind of glad of that as well. And, I mean, the one thing they will do domestically in terms of repeats or remakes is take a TV drama and remake it into a movie. And sometimes it works, and sometimes it really doesn't. If you think of Athena, Goddess of War, and those sorts of things, Lee Byung-hun TV dramas that were remade into movies, they never really quite worked, but they're fodder anyway, so it's just a way of making money, and no one really pays that much of an attention to it.
Okay, the movie opens in a very... considering it's very elegant, and you see still shots of it looking very elegant, it opens in a very documentary-style fashion. In a way where Im Sang-soo looks to have shot very real footage of people eating and the bustling streets and stuff like that. And there's even like a lack of concern to record the dialogue clearly. Like, thank God for subtitles, because some of the dialogue is not recorded clearly, almost by intent. But I'm not sure, and this might qualify as a spoiler, but I'm not going to say too much. You'll get this. I'm not so sure that the opening suicide was that needed. And I'll leave it at that, to be honest. My reasoning being that it's a bit like foreshadowing in a way that wasn't needed when all was said and done, but that's just me personally.
I totally agree with you. And I did bring it up with Im Sang-soo as to say, are you foreshadowing something or other?
Slap.
In the interview, and it was slap, slap. And he just sort of said, no, it was nothing to do with that. And you just think, so it really was just to make you go, oh! From my mind, that makes it even less necessary.
Because it could have, like, we could have entered the story with 10 minutes into the movie as it is now, and we still would have got it. So I don't think that setup was necessary. But what I am impressed by, or was impressed by, as soon as the movie kind of drops, the documentary opening, Im Sang-soo shows off a very nicely active camera. You notice it more in the beginning, then when you get into the movie, you kind of are immersed in it. But it's like very... very elegant looking crane shots, dolly shots, but it's done with an assured hand. This is not a director that feels like he or she graduates to the big times and does flashy shit just because that's what you do, right? Love me. Like, it really comes with an assured, confident hand of a style. And then, like, when you're into the movie, you don't think too much about what the camera is doing. But I was genuinely impressed by that. It drew attention to itself, but not in a very desperate way either. So I don't know if this has been evident in any other movie, but it added to the elegance and obviously the technical professionalism present here.
Very much so. I mean, I'll go back to A Good Lawyer's Wife, which to my mind is probably his best ever film, starring Moon So-ri, who she's a dancer. She starts an affair with a younger man, which is frowned upon, et cetera, et cetera. So you've got, you know, the whole sex and I guess the politics of what's right and what's wrong morally. She's a cyclist as well. And the way Im Sang-soo follows her around as she cycles through the city is just, it reeks of the start of The Housemaid, just that whole dolly, the whole crane shots, and it's all so natural and so perfectly done. This is a man who knows how to sit behind a camera.
That's a good thing, going from acting to behind the camera and bringing some chops that seems very behind the camera throughout his entire professional life, kind of thing. So it's good that, but obviously he just kind of shoots it, and you don't notice too much about. The elegant surroundings are enough to just kind of just, you can plant the camera right there, and the surroundings will speak fairly great volumes about the story going on here. Because I didn't notice anything aside from these opening kind of technical shots, and then I was into the story. I didn't know, Paul, which was cool, how different this would be. I kind of expected, or like in the back of my head, like, this was what The Housemaid did. All right, it's slightly different, so it's probably going to end up here. No, it's not. Nice. I like that. I like that it didn't go according to my, not expectations, but my knowledge of the prior movie, that it deviated a fair amount from it. Like, when her hiring happened and all of that, I was thinking, like, nice, she is a girl that doesn't look as devious as our prior housemaid. That's good, like, because you don't know she's devious, and when she is, it's going to be awesome. And it doesn't go down those routes extensively at all, because what we have here is a story of, this is not a housemaid taking over this household in the same way at all. She is, for lack of a better word, it might be too much to and disagree with me, Paul, but she is a victim.
Yeah, she's essentially, she's put herself in a position where she's likely to be destroyed. You know, she's the naive one. You watch those early scenes when she's hanging around with little Nami, the little girl, and the smile on her face, the naivety. She's even when she first meets the older maid to get the job, you see her bouncing across the street and you think, that's Jun Do-yeon. She's mid-30s at this stage. You know, and she looks like...
Mid-30s? Are you kidding me? She looked like 25.
I know. And after, I remember after we talked about doing this, I remember speaking to you on social network or whatever and saying that I'd sat and watched three of her movies all in one go one night just because I was on a Jun Do-yeon thing. You know, it was The Housemaid. It was Secret Sunshine, which was actually later than this. And No Blood, No Tears, which is way back from, you know, I think 99, 2000. And she looks exactly the same. She does. She hasn't aged a day. And you just think, how?
Them Asian genes.
You know, absolutely astonishing. So she, to this day, she can still play the young, naive, or the feisty, or the vengeful. She's amazing. She blows me away every time.
You know, let's reverse it. One casting that I wasn't very convinced of was the casting of the wife. Not as the wife, but the fact that, you know, was it... She's pregnant in the movie, right? Which is, she looks like she's like 20 years old, right? Not, nothing against that. But is the implication that Nami was her kid or from a prior marriage? Because if it was her kid, then I'm a bit more annoyed by the casting, or frightened by the casting.
From what you can guess, I would say it's from another marriage. It's never said, but she is too young. And at the end of the day, number one, anyone who was in Korea who would know her, if you watch TV dramas, she's very much a TV drama girl. She's been playing the young girls. She still plays the young girls. I don't think she was mature enough for this role. when I watched her, I could almost see her acting. There are some of the looks she does when she looks from left to right, and it's really noticeable she's doing it by the buttons. Why he chose her, I guess anybody's guess is as good as mine.
She has the look, and she's not terrible, but I didn't buy the casting as such. I thought, a 20-year-old can expect twins, of course, and that's obviously legal and all, and an 18-year-old can, and rich men do marry young sometimes. Like, there's nothing illegal going on here, but I wasn't very convinced as such of her, and like a little bit defective, like initially when she looks like a young bored girl wanting a new toy, and therefore the housemaid looks like a new toy. And even in this version, they dress her up as a housemaid. This is such a rich household that you can't like go into your street clothes and then work. Like, you have to look like a housemaid. So they change it up even on that level a little bit. But like, no one's really terrible here. But that was something that kind of struck me. Hey, I'm not too sure here that this. And my God, did she have that kid when she was 15? I was a bit concerned.
I kind of agree with you. The other thing that not upset me but made me feel a little bit is the fact that when you look at the various sex scenes, in every one of hers, she's got a dress on. And I actually asked Im Sang-soo about that as well. I said, is that something to do with the whole, you know, the housemaid is far more willing to be wanton because she's poorer? And he was like, no, it's just because the younger actress, the leader of the house, had a no nudity clause in her contract. And you think, well, yeah, but it doesn't really work as well as it should, because it just doesn't fit. But you can't turn around and say that to a director. But that's exactly what I thought. You know, every time she's having sex with him and she's got a dress on, it just, like any movie, it just makes me think that's not what you do.
But yeah, the thing is, there's some effective uncomfort with, in terms of how superior these rich men and women act, you know, but it's almost verging, but not quite, but maybe this is me being too detailed in my thoughts, but it's almost verging on being quite on the nose. Like, we know pretty early on that we're wealthy, we'll swallow you. Like, it's not superbly scary at all times that the lengths that these go to. There are some effective, like, chills here and some effective scenes, but it didn't feel that fresh either to me, to be honest. Like, I've seen enough variations of the fact that in film, the wealth wield enough power sexually and financially that they're gonna mess people up, you know, young, old men or women, and chew them up and swallow. Like overall, the movie's quite entertaining and it moves, it's well-paced movie and all of that, but I didn't feel a uncomfort to a point where I think this was harrowing or anything. Like, it's there, it's fairly effective the way they present these wealthy people that don't seem kind at all, which is then a miracle in terms of, like, the kid is very much kind. And I think those are some of the strongest scenes, actually. The interaction between little Nami, who's a wonderful child actress. Don't know if it's a boy or girl, to be honest.
Little girl.
Right. Their scenes are really good. And those scenes were designed, obviously, to display warmth and her natural motherly nature towards this kid that she is destined to race, because the housemaid will spend a lot more time with the kid compared to the parents. That's the kind of dealio. Those are good, and I'm always impressed by, like, these one-shot one-on-ones that actors perform in, whether they're young actors in this case, and in one case, and they're one slightly older, mid-30s. they're good, they're very good. Like, it shows Im Sang-soo could just point the camera and shoot affecting, realistic and engrossing immersive stuff. So those are those linger, those scenes, to be honest, those two, three really warm scenes between the housemaid and the kid.
I agree with you again. I mean, in terms of the whole, maybe it's a little bit too forcefully pushed. I think that, and it's just my opinion, but I think that was down to the fact that this is the housemaid. If you look at the original, with the whole, as I say, despicable women, the woman will bring the downfall of man. I have a feeling Im Sang-soo from the outset said, I've got to say that this is my movie. I've got to show that it's poor against wealthy. So the first scenes are the poor, the manual workers in the street. to the really overly rich, and I'm going to push that and push that and push that and then tell the story. And I don't think he needs to do that. But I think that's why it's there. I think it's why it's so forceful, if you like. It's almost Aung San Suu saying, this is my film, and remember, this is the sort of stuff I talk about, and I'm going to talk about it now.
The way you explain it, it seems that way to me, without me knowing his filmography, but it seems, you know the old saying that you notice when the rhythm is off and you don't notice when the rhythm is on. There was something that was made me feel like something is a bit off and too obvious here, but fine. Mm. It didn't stall the movie or anything, like it made me annoyed or anything, not at all. I just made that note of what I observed, and we moved on. Like, when all is said and done, like, 1960 is only mildly in the back of your head, which is good. You follow this new vision to see where it's going to take you. It took me okay places. And that's like, I barely compared by maybe a third in. I thought a little bit more about The Housemaid, and then I kind of forgot about it, the 1961. Yeah, yeah. And then just watched this movie, which is a good sign, I think. There's some either intentional or unintentional pieces of humor here. One of my favorite bits that made me laugh so much is during the first sex scene between husband and wife, just before the first sex scene between the husband and the housemaid. The husband, while his, I'm sorry to be rude, while his wife is on top of him, his wine glass is he's got wine in a glass while fucking his wife. He's like permanently glued to his fucking hand, that wine. Which I just thought was like, I hope that was intentional, for God's sake, because if it's not, then it's unintentionally funny, and that's not good.
I would hope it was intentional, but you know, number one, fair play for being able to keep a glass of wine in your hand. And number two, it just sort of says, maybe you want to go and see The Housemaid because your wife's not doing it for you. You're able to hold a wine glass. Yes, very, very amusing.
That brings us to the nudity. Obviously, this scene where he first has sex with the housemaid and kind of starts controlling her. You know, he's a perv in a controlled position. And he's not systematic about his approach to her. It just goes after her body. So that brings me to my personal question that I'm curious about. I obviously don't follow Korean cinema intensely. I don't read about it intensely. But I, anyway, rarely hear nudity discussed in Korean mainstream cinema, because this is not an indie that no one saw anything. So what is the deal there? Is nudity frequent or infrequent or mildly frequent in Korean mainstream cinema?
There has been a really nasty trend over the past 4 or 5 years for mainstream films to suddenly be tagged erotic and have sex scenes in them for the sake of having sex scenes in them. It all sort of started around 2009, 2008, and it's got worse and worse and worse. And it really culminated, I think, in 2012 when Korea released a film called Natalie, which was Korea's first 3D film. And it's essentially a 3D, I guess you could call it porn. It's a very, very boring story with 3D sex scenes throughout. And they're not very good sex scenes. From that point on, every year there's, erotic thriller, erotic drama. And it's almost them trying to push people into the cinema for this new nudity, this new eroticism. I mean, nudity has been in Korean cinema, if you look for it, for years. There were films banned in the late 90s, Lies, Yellow Hair, we've mentioned them before, right up through Im Sang-soo's A Good Lawyer's Wife is humongously rude. I think it's all worthwhile nudity. I think everything has its part, and I think mostly it does in The Housemaid as well, but there really has been a tendency for, let's put some sex scenes in it so we can call it erotic, so we can get it labeled 19, so that all the adults will think, oh, that'll be racy, let's go and see it. And 9 times out of 10, the stories have been really bad. It's changing slowly. There have been about 3 films in the last couple of years that have been full of nudity, but it's been worthwhile. And Scarlet Innocence, which we've talked about very recently, Yim Pil-sun's latest film, is one of them. It's one of those that has got a great story, and the sex and nudity in it is not only worthwhile, it's necessary.
Yeah, and I agree. I didn't feel it was desperate or gratuitous here. It was rather, because I didn't know it, that it was going to go these places. It was rather like shocking that it was that explicit. They really throw you into the casual nudity. Like the first piece of nudity we see from our lead actress is very casual. She's putting on a top where the husband comes down. And I think that's more clever rather than like, here she is, nude. Like that was so casual that I thought like, good alternate way into an explicit nature in film, you know what I mean? Or even more realistic, to be honest. And my God, a big actress that also does nudity. Of course, brave, but if you are in the public eye and a big actress getting a variety of roles, there could be a problem.
Totally. And I think even if you consider The Housemaid, apart from anything else, you've got to give huge credit to Jun Do-young for doing the amount of nudity that's in The Housemaid. The one scene that sticks with in my mind in terms of that is when Hoon first goes to have sex with her after she's put her top on, as you mentioned. He pulls the sheets back and she's there in her panties, I guess. And all I'll say is the way Im Sang-soo has framed that and the fact that you can see a lot more than even you should be able to see says an awful lot for her bravery.
It's you can see outlines of privates, let's just say that.
Even the amount of nudity in Korean cinema I'm used to, when I first saw that, I was shocked. I really was.
It's like a shot that sits there as well. This whole scene is about like extended takes as well, which just amps the bravery of the actress and the actor, of course, who's only, I don't know if you see his backside or anything, but
yeah, you do several times,
right? You do, okay. I mean, he's nothing to be ashamed of, really, because he looks ripped. So
well, yeah, fair point.
Yeah, you know what? I do have a problem with this scene, though. On a story level, it might have been set up sufficiently in a way, but I was rather confused when she all of a sudden throws herself at him and says like, oh my God, I miss that smell. Because that is supposed to indicate that she's missed the touch of a man. But to be honest, Paul, I didn't even get that from prior scenes that she's this distraught divorcee that finally gets to be touched again. And to be honest, it affected a large stretch of the rest of the movie. I didn't buy the motivation into this affair, to be honest. But that's just me personally. What did you think of that? Because it's such a key turnaround.
I totally agree with you in terms of that scene alone. If you actually took that out, aside from the nudity, whatever else, I like to see her as, again, the young, naive victim and saying, oh, I've missed that smell, et cetera, almost pushes her to be much more knowledgeable about the world, which I don't think she is. The whole point of her character arc is the fact that she's naive. She knows nothing of the world. She's not ready for these people. And I think that detracts from it, as you say. Once it was done, I almost tried to delete it from my mind and treat her as the young girl skipping across the road.
Unlike the very obvious, like, those rich bastards, they're pretty evil, aren't they? You notice that, like you read about, but this was one of like, hey, what, she's so young, hey, what's going on here? Oh my God, it's getting murky now. I am pretty much the dumbest viewer in the world, so you could be very obvious and I'll miss it. But I felt like, I don't think that was well made.
No, I don't, and I mean, there is an element of that to Im Sang-soo's work. He likes that whole, you know, women who are held back and also morally right, who then just suddenly unleash this, you know, oh, I miss that smell. Again, if you go back to A Good Lawyer's Wife, you've got a dancer who's peeped on by a young man and is morally abhorred by it. And within the space of 15 minutes, she started opening her curtain and dancing naked for him. She goes to a cinema and she seduces him in the cinema, and he ends up being the naive one. She's the seductress, I guess. And she was originally meant to be the morally right woman. So he's got this thing of switching women from one point to another. In this case, I don't think that worked. He should have kept it as it was.
Yeah, you could have, like, ejected that bit of story strand about her being a divorcee. Indeed, I think it would have worked better. But I do admire the movie for being so damn explicit and not shy about the way it presents dialogue and content either. There is nudity, there is sex, but the most, for lack of a better word, rude and explicit things happen in dialogue. Yeah. And it did make me laugh because I'm so damn immature. You know the scene where the old housemaid, she hears outside of the door what's going on in essentially the second sex scene. This is all in the movie. It's not me trying to be immature and explicit for the sake of it, but I just thought it was so amusing that what she hears from inside the room, outside the door, because he's talking about, you know, again, pardon me, viewers, listeners, about ejaculating into her mouth. So like the dialogue outside, now in your mouth, where is it? Here! Hearing that outside the door, just, I know what's going on in there, but it's those images of just two wild people going at it.
The look on her face is absolutely priceless.
Yeah, so I don't hope, well, maybe they did, maybe she didn't mind, but like, I wonder if someone shouted it, like, off screen, like, what's the dialogue? What's going on in the room? And some poor bastard had to, like, recite that to the older woman, but hey, maybe she was cool with it, like, so.
Well, you know, I have to say I've interviewed her as well.
My God, did you ask that question? Like, you know the dialogue in a movie? Now in your mouth! Where is it here? Did you hear that on the set?
I did worse than that, Ken. I may have mentioned Im Sang-soo's film after The Housemaid was called The Taste of Money, which is one of the worst films I've ever seen in my life.
I'm almost annoyed by the title already, to be honest.
It's just... It's a similar thing. It's about power. It's about money, rich, poor. And the older actress, Yoon Yoo-jung, is in it. And in it, this octogenarian, I don't know, 60, 70, 80, whatever age she is, has sex with a 21-year-old. And I actually asked her about that in the interview. And she just said, I'm at an age where I don't care. I have no problem with sex. That's why we're here. I have no problem with nudity. If you want me to stand up and take my clothes off now, I will. She was phenomenal, but I would imagine in terms of The Housemaid, her hearing that's nothing to her. She's heard it all before. She's fine with it.
Like, oh boy, here he goes again. Like, almost like she's heard that from the husband before with other housemaids, you know. So
you would think so, yeah.
Like I said, I didn't have problem following the movie in general, but when it started to involve more threads and more characters steering her downward spiral and watching her spiral, because as I said, the mother of the wife becomes a key player in all of this. And I thought to myself, and maybe this was me comparing it too much to The Housemaid, but I thought it was a thread too many. I didn't think it needed another power player in the case of this, the mother, to add to this heinous spiral that's about to happen. Because mid-movie, slight spoiler, it turns out the housemaid is pregnant, and that starts a really heinous darkness, mostly verbally, not so much like we see some antics that are physical and on screen, but like mostly the things they say and the attitude that they bring. That's pretty horrible. But I wasn't particularly interested in having another character added. But again, that might be slightly unfair, because that might have been an unconscious echo of The Housemaid, which was very restricted to the main family and not an additional part of the family. Like, and we didn't even have an elder housemaid teaching her the ropes or anything in the original. That role was fine, though, because she was this interesting character in the middle, knowing what the family was about and what they were capable of, but she wasn't pleased that our young housemaid was about to be swallowed or anything. So that role is fine, but that's just my opinion of the mother of the wife. That I found it hard to be super engaged when she was introduced as well, because the same things were about to go down anyway. The rich are going to start chewing this poor housemaid anyway. So I don't think she was a key component to getting that off the ground. But hey, that's just me. I'm not necessarily right.
True. I agree with you mostly. I agree that maybe there would have been too many, apart from the fact that I don't think Siowoo was really as good a character as she could have been, whether it's down to the actress or down to her youth or down to whatever else. I think the addition of the mother, if nothing else, gave a truly mature evil element to that side of the family, which wouldn't have been there. I don't think that young actress would have been able to cover that as well on her own. That's just my take on it. I mean, for me, the older housemaid and Jeanne Young are actually the main keys. They're the draws. The older housemaid, I love the way she's so brash and so horrible at the start, and she gradually warms towards the character of Eun-Yi. And by the end of it, she's actually on her side, and the things she says about the family when she's in the bath, etc., etc. I think she's wonderful. I think she's phenomenal. She does it for me.
Decent little comedian, judging by that tiny sequence where she finally has the house to herself, the older housemaid. She kicks off her shoes, I think, but regardless if she did that, she walks around with like a fire in her step, and she's like screams or yells out a little bit, "Liberation! Fine!" Like some fucking quiet around here, some peace, peace, literal peace, no evil anymore for about 5 minutes. Like the only time I felt the more effective time I felt like, this is pretty damn harrowing, and she's trapped in here. Like, the controlling nature of the wealthy family versus the housemaid, again, the pregnant housemaid, and their attitude to solving problems, money being one, such a solution. I think the scene where they want to pay her off, and when she doesn't accept that, I think it was, but then they start to slap her multiple times. I think that was a very effective, scary little scene, because she's literally trapped in that room and might just be two against one, but it really says a lot about her predicament, and it was one of the more affecting things in all its simplicity, because we're not talking a hugely choreographed piece of physical violence here, like slap, because it's quite degrading too, the way she continually slaps her. By the way, running time, we said it in the first, in the main podcast. This is a Korean short movie. it is a Korean short movie. It's barely...
Pretty much.
Like, it's barely feature length, judging by Korean standards. Again, Paul, if you want to repeat, how long is this movie in actuality? Is it 2 hours 40? Is it 2 hours 20?
Nope, this is 107 minutes, which is, you know, what, an hour and 27. Not even an hour and a half.
Oh, it's an hour and 47, my friend.
Excuse my maths.
That would have been awesome. 87 minutes. I'll watch this twice.
You know, we're not even close to 2 hours. I remember, again, when you and I were talking, Kenneth, when I pulled out the DVD to just have a little look, and my eyesight not being what it was, I looked on the back and I thought it said 187. And I was like, oh, we're there again.
That makes sense.
Then you put the light on, you think, oh, it's only 107, we're there. So yeah, this is the short in comparison to everything else. And time-wise, I think it's the right length. I don't think it needs to be any shorter particularly. I don't think it needs to be any longer.
No, I mean, that's a very reasonable length. You realize that about two-thirds in, like, this structure, even when it was like 13 minutes left and there's a key line of, I want revenge, like, I must have revenge, you would think in a movie that didn't know how to pace itself, that would have meant an additional 45 minutes of story to tell. That's like 30 minutes left. There's time for revenge. Good. There's going to be more snap to it. It is going to end soon. Not that I yearned for the ending, but I realized, like, good. This is a well-paced movie, well-chosen that it is, only slightly longer than the original movie. Slightly less than 10 minutes longer, I think. Maybe the original was 100 or something like that, or maybe the same length. Regardless, that's a good choice, and it's general in tune performances. There's no one really making an ass of themselves purely here. Again, we talked of some miscasting, but like the whole trek towards the end with the evil women and evil humans being really heinous, that's fairly effective, pretty entertaining. But if he is stating something here from his heart and really wanting this movie to mean something, then I have to say a little bit of, and I'm sorry if this sounds immature, but I personally, it's a little bit of statement. Whatever. I mean, I don't see there's a need for a statement here. Like, I see it on the surface, a fairly entertaining movie. Might be unfair, but I didn't feel that there was a deep statement here. I might be wrong, and you might think there is a deep statement here. So the floor is yours.
I'm always the first to go, but if you look at the history of this, that, and the other, in this case, I agree with you. I don't think there's a huge statement. I think he's saying the poor will always be the victims of the rich. I think that's it. And it's said in the first half hour.
Well, it's good that there's no more that he haven't gone on record and say like, oh no, there's tons more. Let me tell you about it. Like, it's good that he also restricted it to kind of what the plot synopsis suggests too.
He's telling a story and he's putting his little fetishes in, but essentially it's entertainment. It's meant as entertainment, and certainly from my point of view, the final few scenes scream that all this is entertainment.
Yeah, some pretty nasty things going on at the end. That was pretty fun, even though it was tragic, some things that happened. But that was I didn't expect the key big moment that everyone remembers from the end to happen.
No one does. And every time you look back at it, you think, really, is that what happened? Really? Wow! Utter surprise. And it sort of worked for me on one level. And on another, I did go, oh, come on, you've got to be kidding me. It's effective, and it certainly is a memorable moment, even if the rest of the film doesn't particularly stay with you.
It's that movie's, not really that movie's Rats, but it's one of this movie's main memorable images. And in The Housemaid, very much like the rat is... The death of the rat is one of the more lingering images of The Housemaid. But that one has tons of more better stuff, if we're going to be slightly comparing again. But hey, I mean, it's good that they put the actual title of the movie after it's done. So you don't have that, The Housemaid, here we go. Here starts The Housemaid. Like, The Housemaid comes at the end, and then all the credits and all of that. But again, it's a shame that film business wasn't brave enough to call this something completely different, but do it this way and see which people interpret it as, I think they're riffing on The Housemaid, if that's good or not. Let me see if it is good or not. Like, it would have been so brave to just distance yourself completely, but maybe morally and politically you just can't do that to this property, I guess. So what they put there at the end was that based on or inspired by, I don't remember the wording now, to be honest. It's worded in English, but
I think it's inspired by.
Right, and that's fair enough. Like, so inspired by is a good interpretation of events here. Remake, no, not in parts. It is The Housemaid, but it's not one of those remakes where, like, if you saw the original, there's no elements of surprise left. There is stuff here that feels new to an enough extent where you disconnect the 1960 Housemaid, and I think that's one of the better things about it. But overall, it's okay, but nothing that stayed with me as such.
In hindsight, if you could have seen this before you'd seen The Housemaid 1960, would you have preferred to have watched this without knowledge of the original?
Good question. I'm not sure, to be honest. It's if it had been for work, because this is work. Unpaid, but still work. It might have struck a little bit more of a fresh chord with me. But if it had been just casual viewing and then going into The Housemaid for work, I'm not sure it would have mattered either way, to be honest. It's a difficult question to answer. I didn't think like, oh my god, I just needed to watch this before when all was said and done in hindsight, because it would have been so much better. Because I didn't compare the two, I don't think it would
fair
have...
Deal, fair deal.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm making sense or not, but...
No, you are.
I like that it went this way, and like that I stopped thinking of Kim Ki-young pretty quickly. Any other notes, or other than that you had some controversy to share with us from your interview? Like,
One piece of controversy. There is a scene in The Housemaid, and this shows my obsessive nature, I guess, so bear with me. There's a scene in The Housemaid where the older maid, played by Yoon Yi-jung, is in the bath. Yoon Yi, Jun Do-yeon, is also in the bathroom. She's used the toilet while the older actress is in the bath. She steps up to the mirror and they start. This is just after the older housemaid has found out about her love affair with the rich boss. And they're talking about, you know, sex. Do you have a boyfriend? You still have it, et cetera, et cetera. And it's all very much hidden agenda of she knows everything, et cetera, et cetera. As you look at that scene, if you look down at Jun Do-yeon's legs, you will see a huge scar on her left thigh.
Oh, yeah.
When I first watched The Housemaid, I'm a huge fan of hers. I have been for years. And I saw that scar, and I don't think anybody else noticed it. But for me, it was like, that's CGI, because she doesn't have a scar on her leg. I've seen her in nude scenes numerous times. I've seen all of her films. I know her stuff inside out. She does not have a scar.
That sounded dodgy. I'm sorry. I know her stuff inside out.
I know. It sounds so dodgy even talking about it. But no, I agree. I totally agree. But to be even more dodgy, I got home straight after having seen The Housemaid, and I pulled out all her DVDs. And I watched Happy End. I watched, you know, No Blood, No Tears, all of which are phenomenal movies. I urge you to see them. All of which have got sex scenes in them. And in every one of them, there wasn't a scar on her leg. But she was filmed from the other side. So when I interviewed Im Sang-soo, I said, look, I watched The Housemaid. There's a huge scar on Jun Do-yeon's leg. Is that CGI? Why did you put it in? Was it to say there was something in her past where she'd been burnt before, et cetera, et cetera. And he went, don't know if I can answer you. And he hummed and hawed for about 5 minutes. And he said, okay, I'm going to answer you. I don't know if I'm doing the right thing here. He was incredibly nervous about it. And he told me that scar on Jun Do-yeon's leg is a real scar. They had a huge conversation before The Housemaid where she went to him and said, look, I've got a scar on this leg. Filming from this side will show it. I don't know whether you're up for it. I don't know if I'm up for it. And they had a big discussion about it. And he talked her into having it on screen because he thought it fitted with her character. And when you look at all her older movies, she's always framed from the other side because she didn't want that scar to be shown on screen. I later interviewed the director of Happy End, one of her earliest nude scenes, and I asked him the same question. And he said he was so proud to have heard that between Happy End and The Housemaid, she'd been willing to have it on screen. It showed how she'd matured and felt good about herself, because when she'd done Happy End, she'd refused to be filmed from the other side. And that's your big oomph thing.
Well, it's not even controversial. It's rather beautiful, actually. Like, what a brave thing to do. I mean, not to like pry or anything, but is it like just some kind of skin condition she's had, or has she been burnt, or?
It's essentially just a skin condition that's caused a mark on her leg, and it looks like a scar. But I think it's absolutely beautiful that her confidence has matured to the point where when she did The Housemaid, she was like, yeah, let's do this. Let's film it, where she never would before. And I said, I think it speaks a great deal about her as an actress, apart from anything else. I think it's a wonderful story.
And she's reached that age again, mid 30s. Holy crap. Mid 30s. That can't be true, but it is true. But she must have reached the age where she's not a prey to God that she's not getting it done. Like, just because she's a movie actress and a film star, that she won't go in there and like do expensive surgery to have it like removed. I hope she never does, because that just speaks volumes of her character that she allowed it on screen, and not in a way where like, oh my god, a scar in every scene. Like, I don't think it's in more than one scene, to be honest. I noticed it, but like dropped it immediately because I thought, as you did, character thing, probably, right on.
Yeah, totally. I think it speaks a lot for her, and you know, her putting it on screen just screams to me that she's no intention of getting anything changed. That's part of who she is. And, you know, she's a phenomenal actress. She's a beautiful lady. You know, she, as it says in The Housemaid, she still got it, and she does. You know, I think it speaks a lot to her character.
And Paul Quinn can make Korean directors nervous, as we now know.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you have never. I honestly wish it had been filmed, because you would have watched him squirm. Obviously, he, you know, this isn't a big known thing, and he didn't know whether to ask it or not. If I'd known it was a real scar, I probably wouldn't have asked the question anyway. It was just because, like you, I thought, oh, look, he's done CGI there. So we're fools fear to tread, but we got a good answer.
It would have been great if he, like Homer Simpson style, ran out of the room and you would hear a car leaving the parking lot quickly. I don't think he's coming back.
With Paul sitting, flicking through his papers.
That was odd. I wish we filmed that, at least. But hey, there it is. Okay, Paul, let's wrap this up. As for availability of The Housemaid, it's well distributed on disc since release in 2010. With both Korean DVD and now Blu-ray editions available. And that Blu-ray edition is region A, B, C, which means it's essentially region free. I'm not sure there's a D region in Blu-ray land, but you can play it in the UK. I can play it in Sweden, and also I think you can play it in America if it covers A, B, and C. There's also Taiwanese and Hong Kong editions on DVD with subtitles. The Blu-ray edition and the DVD in Korea also have subtitles. So you're all covered. And the US and Canadian Netflix carries the movie in HD as well, ready to be streamed. So you can watch it that way. And there's a good chance that it's on iTunes as well if you want to see it that way. So well distributed overall.
And on top of that, it's also available on Region 2 DVD in the UK. So.
Well, okay, that's the nature of the bonus episodes. We are done when we are done. No boring contact information. And so this is essentially us signing off. So thank you, everybody, for following us to the extended Housemaid coverage, the optional coverage here in the bonus section. So it's a delight to discuss regardless with you, Paul, about Korean cinema. But it's cool that you could and wanted to extend the Housemaid coverage, because now we can add optional context to the whole canon.
I think it just gives a complete picture, whether one's a remake or a reimagining. I think they're all linked in terms of what everybody thinks, so it's good to have a complete picture.
Indeed. Well, this is us therefore signing off really quickly for you. So thank you very much for listening. And I'll be Kennedy, and with me was Paul, Mr. Controversy himself, Quinn from Hangul Celluloid. So say bye, buddy.
Good night, gentlemen.
Don't ask me any difficult questions, okay?
We're fine.
I think Kenneth left the podcast.